You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that intersect, confront, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. So let's tap into the pulse of today's youth this hour. The Boomerang Project is a company that trains educators to facilitate peer mentoring in schools using leadership and group development methodologies. It offers anti-bullying tips for students, parents, and educators. The Boomerang Project has reached over 3,000 schools and 9,000 educators through their internationally recognized high school and middle school student mentoring programs. Co-founder Mary Beth Campbell talks with 411 Teen. Mary Beth, welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you very much. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, look forward to talking with you and having you share the valuable information about the Boomerang Project. Just what is the Boomerang Project?
Well, we are an organization of mostly former teachers who saw some need in schools and decided to leave teaching and form a company that primarily focuses on reducing bullying in schools and really creating a safe environment for all students, but we do that through focusing on the incoming students. So in high school, that means we're focusing on the ninth graders, and in middle school, we're focusing on the sixth or seventh graders, whatever it is you have your incoming, whether it's a junior high or middle school.
Okay. So you provide training for students, for parents, for teachers. What do you do?
The answer to that is yes.
Great.
We do all of the above.
Something for everyone.
Pretty much. If you're near us, we'll train you. But what we really do is we work primarily with educators to train them to bring the programs back to their school. And we made the choice when we formed our company to not be, the term would be consultants to schools, because as educators ourselves, what we recognize is that when you bring somebody from the outside in, it might work while they're there, and it might work for a day or two after they've gone, but really, truly, the only way to make change at a school and really to, you know, shift paradigms, because that's what we're really trying to do at our schools, is to make it feel organic and to make it feel like it is, you know, a part of the school's culture, not something that somebody else is bringing and imposing. So what we really decided to do was create a model where we bring the teachers to us, we train them in everything we've learned and everything we've known for the past, you know, 20 years or so, and we send them back to their schools and say, you know, the only thing we ask is that you follow our guidelines because we know it's a recipe that works. And so when it goes back, it feels like something that was created by the school for the school, and that's exactly what we want.
Now, what exactly does this training involve for our listening audience? We have a lot of teachers and educators, administrators that tune in. So this may be very beneficial. It may be something they may like to further pursue. What does the training involve?
So what we do is you know, we have anywhere between 16 and 18 trainings a year, and they're out throughout the country and in Canada. And what you do is the teacher comes to our training, and it's 3 days, and it's a total of 30 hours over 3 days, so you can see that the days are very long. And it's primarily, it is really helping educators understand the power they have to shift the culture at their school, that it really lies within them. And we start by just showing them how important relationships are on campus. Because, you know, our educational system is such that, you know, we're a little bit backwards. We value rigor and rules and regulations before we value relationships. And so much of what the downfall, I think, of what's happening in our education system is a part of that, is that we've forgotten about the people that are at the school. And in some cases, these people are vulnerable. You know, there are kids, there are children that are coming into their schools. So what we do is we show them, and we do it in a very fun and dynamic way, we show them the power of relationships. And once they learn the power of relationships, then what we do is we work from there and say, now that you've built a relation, you can build a relationship on your campus, you can actually get anything done. You can, you know, you can get a group of students. Once you have a relationship with them, you can get a group of students to, you know, essentially shift the culture of your school because that feels good and they want to, once mm-hmm. they realize they matter and mm-hmm. that people care about them. When a lot of times, you know, one of the biggest complaints students have about being at school is that no one cares about them. Mm-hmm. Well, just consider what happens when no one cares about you. You don't care.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what we do is we just kind of turn that on its head and say, what if we actually let them know from day one, before anything else, before any rules, before anything came up, the first thing we said was basically, we care about you and we care about your success. Would that make a difference? And it turns out it makes a huge difference. And as a result, you know, discipline problems go down, attendance goes up, grades go up. It really makes a shift. So over those 3 days, what we do is we train the teachers to show the students how to be leaders on their campus, how to care about students, and we give them a formula to do it and a structure in which to fit it in.
Now, when you talk about relationships, I mean, there are a number of relationships that go on in a school community. Are mm-hmm. you talking about relationships between teachers, relationships between between teachers and students, relationships between students, all of the above? You know,
yep. It's a big package.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We start at the very basic relationship, which is student to student. That's where we start. And what we do is we train the teachers to select a group of upper grade students. So in high school, let's just say that would be some juniors and seniors.
Okay.
And what they do is they train these students, based on our training, over a course of 2 days, about leadership and responsibility and caring for students. And it's fun and it's dynamic. And it really helps the juniors and seniors to understand the power they have at their school to make transformation. And so when those ninth graders come in and they see these juniors and seniors are excited about mm-hmm. them coming in and like, I'm here to help you and I'm ready to help you, that entire class of 450 or however old many it is, ninth graders, comes in with a positive attitude, and they're excited to be there because they know there's some upper grade kids excited to be there. And what happens from there is, you know, that's a quarter of your school, of your student population is the ninth grade class. If you can bring a ninth grade class in and make them feel welcomed and a part of the community as opposed to hazed and harassed and booed at the first assembly, imagine the shift that you can create if a quarter of your school feels great. And so every year, the new class that comes in feels good. And so over a course of 4 years, you have an entire shift, and it's brought about by these older students who look at the incoming ninth graders as an opportunity to grow their school family mm-hmm. as opposed to an opportunity to exert power and hierarchy over them.
Well, that's
and
real
what that does is over time, it creates a whole shift on your mm-hmm. your school campus.
Well, I would think that's very strategic because those years, that ninth grade and that entry into middle school, whether it's sixth grade or seventh grade, those transitions are so very, very difficult for the students. So anything that can facilitate and make them feel a part of the overall community, I would think would be very effective.
Oh, you know, most kids really, truly decide whether or not they're going to engage in school or mm-hmm. not engage, whether that means drop out or whether that means just show up but not care, within the first 4 to 5 days of school. Like, mm-hmm. that is really that's mm-hmm. when the decisions are made, certainly within the first 2 weeks. And there was an NASSP study done several years ago that said if you can make a positive contact with a student, it takes a 6 to 8 positive contacts with a student within the course of 2 weeks, you can shift a student's attitude. And our goal with the Boomerang Project through our two programs is to have those positive contacts within the first 2 weeks of school through upper grade class, you know, men and women, through link leaders, what they're called link leaders or web mm-hmm. leaders. And we, you know, and the very first positive contact comes the day before school when they come to this, so they come to their orientation and they get welcomed by these upper grade kids. And it's what a great feeling to walk into a gym and not be booed, but to be celebrated and high-fived mm-hmm. and applauded because you showed up. And that's exactly what happens with our program.
Now, what types of schools have you already utilized this in? And I mean, is it a more effective in inner city, suburban, urban? Does it matter?
You know, to some degree it matters. Our schools are effective. I'm sorry, our program is effective in all schools across the board. I'll just say that. And with that said, what really matters, what really determines whether or not our program is going to be effective, is who the person at site gets trained. What educators on site get trained? Do they believe in kids? Are they willing to, you know, put in the hard work that it takes to do it? Are they willing to put in the long hours? That's really, you know, are they movers and shakers on your campus? That's really what determines whether or not the program succeeds. The second thing that determines whether or not the program succeeds is the leaders that are chosen. We have a very distinct policy about what kids you can choose and what kids you know who can become leaders. And as long as you choose those kids, you know, our philosophy is what you want to do is you don't want to just choose one group of kids. You don't want to just choose the student body kids. You don't want to choose the student council kids.
Right.
You want to choose a cross section of your campus. So if 5% of your campus is, you know, Asian American, then 5% of your leaders should be Asian American. If 15% of your campus plays sports, then 15% of your link crew leaders should play sports. So you really want to have it be a direct reflection. And the reason for that is when the ninth graders come in, everybody can identify with somebody. There is someone there for everybody. You know, a lot of schools, what they'll do is they'll bring in the student council, and the student council will put on this whole thing. And, well, if I'm a ninth grader and I have no interest in the student council and all I see is student council kids, the only thing I've learned that day is that I don't belong here.
All right, and you're turned off immediately.
Exactly. But if I'm a kid that has kind of like purple hair and I'm a little alternative and I see a link leader that has, you know, yellow hair, I'm thinking, hey, wow, there is a place for me here. Look at the kid with yellow hair. He fits in.
It sounds like a great program, and it really taps into some real voids that we have there. My next question, though, would be, what is the cost, given that education, you know, funds are very, very limited? What is the cost of this program to a school? And, you know, where, yeah, I know you said there are 16 to 18 locations. How far away does an educator have to travel to participate?
Well, we try because we are in so many. I mean, we're in 44 states. Our schools number in 44 states across the nation and also four provinces in Canada and even some in Thailand. So, you know, we're everywhere. So what we try to do is we do regional training so that people do not have to fly very far. They can get in a car and drive. Our training is not extraordinarily cheap if you hear on the face of it. However, if you break it down, it's a lot less expensive than bringing a consultant every year. To train one educator for our training for 3 days, it costs $2,195. And the reason it sounds expensive at first, however, once you realize that it's all your room and board, all you have to do is show up, and you get trained for those 3 days. You walk away with every single thing you need, all the materials you need to do the training, plus you have our undying phone assistance anytime you need. I mean, you can't believe the questions we get, and we'll do it. You know, people will call up and say, hey, I forgot how this activity goes, and we'll be on the phone, putting it on speaker, and we'll be singing or doing whatever activity it is. And so we really do bend over backwards because we want our schools to be successful. And, you know, a lot of companies will come in and say, hey, we'll do your orientation every year for $5,000 for 5 years. Well, you've blown your budget.
Right.
I mean, that's it. And then, and once they leave, you can't do it. As long as you have a trained and certified person on your campus running our program, then you can do it for as long as you want. All we ask is that when that person leaves, you train somebody else. The cost of the training is 3 days, like I said. It also includes a fourth day in training in the fall. So for 3 days, we give you all the information you need about how to go back and make the orientation successful. And then the very first couple of weeks of school, in fact, they're starting right now, we do what we call our follow-ups. We bring you back for a fourth day, and we give you the in-year program. So our program is not only an orientation and transition program, but there is an in-year program that is helps you maintain the connections from the older kids to the younger kids throughout the year.
Now, you also talked about relationships, I guess, with teachers, amongst teachers?
You know,
how does that work?
Well, you know, it's interesting. What's really great about our program is that if you get two or three people trained, no one else really has to be involved. So a lot of times, you know, schools will do full sale, like, you know, mandates. Hey, everyone's going to do this, you know, third period.
Yeah, right.
And a lot of teachers balk at that because it's like, hey, that's my classroom time, which I totally get. I was a classroom teacher. I totally understand it. But one of the benefits to our program is the people that are that want to do it, and they don't have to in any way really, no one else has to be involved. They can just watch and get the benefits of it. And the benefits are huge. For a freshman teacher like I was, and this is how I got involved in the program in the first place, the first day of school was amazing because the kids were prepared. They weren't nervous. They had their stuff. They knew where the classroom was. It was like, wow, this is awesome. I don't know what they're doing over there, but I'm in. So it's really kind of a great, that's a great benefit. And the other thing that happens is the year-long program has what we call academic follow-ups. So the juniors and seniors will go into freshman classes and teach these 40-minute lessons. That is the only time we ask for classroom time. And it's probably three times a year. And the classroom lessons are, you know, about making good decisions, using your resources, having honor and integrity. And what happens is they go in the classroom, they do the lesson, and generally the teachers watch and they go, I can't believe a junior and senior in high school is capable of doing this. And generally, it gets them pretty fired up about what's going on with the program. So then that really makes the teachers get on board because, you know, not only see these older kids delivering great information, they're also having these ninth graders or sixth graders who are prepared on the first day of school, and it feels great.
So I see where you're talking about creating an atmosphere that not only teaches but reaches the students.
Yeah. That's exactly what we do. That's from our Who We Are card. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We want to teach students and reach them as well. And we have focused a lot in education on the teaching, which of course we have to do, and less on the reaching and less on the relationships and less on the connections that we are. I mean, you know, really, truly, the success of our whole civilization really depends on one thing. I mean, and it's the relationships we build. I mean, from, you know, a conversation in the grocery store to the world leaders who build their own relationships, everything we do every day really all amounts to our relationships.
Okay.
And
hold your thoughts. I was going to say, excuse me, let me ask you to hold your thoughts for a second. I'll get back to you. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll return momentarily. To 411 Teen, a conversational forum for teens and other interested folks. This hour, I'm talking with Mary Beth Campbell. She is the co-founder of the Boomerang Project. Mary Beth, I know I had to rudely interrupt you, and you were just saying something else about the Boomerang Project. Would you like to continue?
Sure. What I was saying is basically the success of who we are as a civilization just depends on our relationships with each other. And we don't necessarily learn that in school. You know, mm-hmm. Schools are more about competition than collaboration a lot of times. And what we're trying to do is create that community sense and community feeling that we're in this together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as people go out in the world, that, you know, that's the attitude they bring to the world, that it's really about our relationships that matter first, and everything else will fall in line.
Well, I would think that this would have a tremendous impact on learning, as you said, the discipline and the grades, the whole learning milieu. I mean, the discipline, the grades, the
mm-hmm.
attitude, it seems
Absolutely.
Like it touches every aspect that is critical to success in education.
Oh, absolutely. Our schools report amazing results. I mean, we have, you know, some after 1 year, sometimes schools have, you know, a school in Janesville, Wisconsin, for instance, had a 48% reduction in failing freshmen, 37% reduction in freshman referrals. I mean, after 1 year, you know, it's really, yes, we see incredible results from it. One school in, I think it's North Farmington, Michigan, they had an amazing thing where they took all of their freshmen that were failing, so all of their failing freshmen, and paired them up with their link crew leader and had the link crew leader say, hey, you know, what's going on? Why are you failing? How, you know, how can we help you? And after, I think, one semester, they discovered that something like 71% of the failing freshmen ended up with a passing grade after that.
Oh, that's phenomenal. That's
Isn't
great.
Isn't that amazing?
Talk about Link Crew and Web. I mean, what are they and how do they interface with the Boomerang Project?
So the Boomerang Project is the parent company, and we do other trainings, and we work with you know, staff, and we do staff development through schools across the United States, and we do some parent things during the first week of school. But the Boomerang Project is really the entity that houses Link Crew and Web. And Web is like the middle school program, and Link Crew is the high school program. And in Web, it's the eighth graders that mentor the sixth graders. And in junior and Link Crew, it's the juniors and seniors that mentor the freshmen. And so really, the Boomerang Project, and we're called the Boomerang Project because we believe that you get back what you give. You put a boomerang out, it comes back to you. So that's our tagline, you get back what you give.
Indeed. You talk about leadership and group development methodologies. How are they utilized? Would you elaborate more on that for us, please?
So what we do when we train the teachers is we really want the educators to be, you know, teacher leaders and educator leaders. And a lot of times we get teachers that come, you know, first, second, and third year teachers who are English teachers or, you know, math or history teachers, and they've never seen themselves as a leader, but they have great potential, and someone at their site said, hey, you should do this program. So they come, and you can see the light go off in their eyes when we talk about, you know, being an agent of change and, you know, putting the students first, and you can see how they see themselves and transform as leaders when they look at the impact they can make at their school site. And so we empower them through a series of activities, but we really what we do is we use something called the group development model that was by Tubman, and it was 15-20 years ago, but it's a very basic model, and it starts with form. In other words, every group comes together and they form. And then they storm, they go through a hard time, they norm, they come to the place where they're like, oh, this feels good, and then they perform. In other words, they do the tasks that need to be done, and then they transform. In other words, they walk away a little better for the experience. And we took that group development model and we overlaid it on our training of the teachers, and we overlaid it on both the Link Crew and the Web orientation days, so that the teachers go through this group development model, and they learn this group development model, and then they then in turn go back and they do it with their students. And their students then recognize their leadership potential and can now articulate and say, oh, well, when I was with my group of students, we were in the forming stage, and that's why that happened. And we give them skills, we give them facilitation skills to talk through that piece and to be like, okay, you know, why do you think this happened? And, you know, so we train the students, we train the teachers, and they train the students to be good facilitators and leaders of the freshman or sixth grade classes.
And then I get the feel that this is something that is ongoing. After they have your training and they come back to their home school, their impact is something that's always happening throughout the year then, right?
Absolutely, yeah. The program the program lives in two ways, really, on your campus. it goes in. It's a full year long program. Like I said, there's academic follow ups where the leaders go into the classroom. There's also social follow ups where the leaders contact the ninth or the sixth graders and invite them to things like tailgate, if you have a tailgate or a homecoming party or the dances. There's also leader-initiated contacts where the leaders are trained to, on their own, reach out to the sixth or ninth graders, whether it's their birthday, to call them and check in and say, hey, how are you doing? Do you have a class you're struggling with? Can I help you? So that's really one, that's the full component of the program, and we train you in every single piece of how to do this. The second piece, though, is that the educators themselves are changed when they return, and they become teacher leaders, and they then take on more responsibility for the culture of the climate on campus, and are more integral into shifting that culture. And the other piece is that they come back and almost always report. I mean, 94% of our attendees have said it is the best, not among the best, but the best professional development they've ever had. And they talk about, you know, whether or not you go back and do the program, it's great teaching tools, and they're better classroom teachers because of it.
That's impressive.
Yeah. We've had whole districts send their folks to our training, not to actually do the program, but just to get the teaching tools that we provide.
Oh, wow. Well, we applaud you. Now, let's say someone's listening and they want to get, you know, more information. How do they contact you? Will you share your contact information?
The contact information, our toll-free number is 800-688-7578. And our website is boomerangproject.com.
Okay. Well, we know bullying. Bullying is a big problem. It's a big issue. It occurs in elementary, middle, and senior high school. And there's some studies that suggest that around 20% of all American children have been victims of bullying at some point, and that even the same number have described themselves as engaging in some form of bullying behavior. I wondered if you would share some of the information that you have gathered concerning anti-bullying tips to foster a safe environment.
Sure. Bullying is such an interesting thing.
Before we get started on that, yeah. I just thought about something. How do you feel about the increase that we're seeing in bullying? I mean, is it a real valid increase, or is it that people feel more open and more free to report what's been going on over years anyway? I mean, the attitude and the approach has changed. It used to be, you know, teachers would see it and they wouldn't do anything, and they'd, you know, say, well, that's just childhood behavior. They'll be okay. So would you respond to that first?
I have no facts to back this up.
Right.
I only have anecdotal information I can give you. But I can tell you that after, you know, I've been doing this for around 15 years, and when people ask me what I do, I explain it to some degree. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking anyone from the ages of, you know, in high school till, you know, someone who's 60, 70 years old. Exactly. I will explain what I do. I work with schools to create anti-bullying programs and make schools a safer place. And every single time I say this to somebody, it does not matter the age, they say, oh, I still remember who my bully was. Every single person, it's profound. It's become more, at first I thought, oh, well, yeah, no, everyone's had their experience. But it happens to me almost every single time when someone goes, oh, man, schools need that. And then they have their own heartbreaking story of how they were bullied. So based on that, I'm going to say it hasn't changed.
Okay.
We're just more aware. Mm-hmm. We're more conscious. People will probably disagree with me, but I think we have become a more compassionate society. Certainly social networking and how small the world is has made us more aware of the problems that exist. And I think this is just one of them. We're more aware of it now, and we're more inclined to, you know, I think kids probably have killed themselves over time because a bully has harassed them for a long time, but we didn't have the resources today to find that out. A community would know, and maybe it wouldn't even be attached to bullying, but now it is. And so to that degree, I think it's great that it's out in the open and that it's talking about it. So I really don't think it's changed that much. I just think we are far more cognizant of it, far more conscious of it.
What responsibility does the school have? Because, you know, often the school has said it's not our responsibility. You know, we don't have any responsibility in that bullying. You know, that's not our purpose.
Yeah.
From your perspective, what being a teacher or a past teacher, you know, what responsibility does the school have?
Well, I think the schools bear the responsibility of creating a safe place for students, and whatever that takes. That's what we are so apt to put in metal detectors and security guards and all of these things to protect our children. The reality is that less than 1% of schools in the United States will have some kind of, you know, massive violent incident like that. Mm-hmm. But a kid will get bullied every day. And because we can't see, you know, it's not a physical thing we can see.
Right.
It's often insidious. I think that the schools hold that stance because they feel powerless to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's you know, structures create our behavior, right? Behavior. And if you set up a school environment where people are, if you give kids a structure to care for each other,
they'll do
you're going to see incidences of bullying don't go down. But if you don't do anything, you'll get nothing. I think that's, you know, people are balk at it a little bit because it feels touchy-feely and it feels, and it's actually, it's just basic human interaction. It's like, you know, we set up structures for kids to change class. We set up structures for kids to play sports. We set up structures for kids to feel physically safe, like with, you know, cameras and metal detectors.
Exactly.
But we don't set up structures for kids to build relationships. And a lot of people would argue, well, isn't that what your extracurriculars do? Well, sure, if you make the team.
Right. Yeah, I was just going to say, everyone is not involved in extracurriculars.
Absolutely.
So you're going to have an avenue that's going to touch all of the children, all of the students there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, because everybody wants the same thing. In a time of transition, everybody wants the same thing. They want safety, and they want information, and they want, you know, some kind of connection. They want safety, information, and a connection. I mean, if you think about any time in your life, if you've ever moved, if you've ever, you know, started a new job, you wanted to feel safe there, you needed to know what to do and where to go, and you needed at least one person to talk to. And if schools would build the safety, information, and connection component into their, you know, overall curriculum plan and safety plan and, you know, the general plan for school, our schools would shift. They would shift dramatically because everybody would go to the school knowing that there was safe, they were safe, they had the information they needed, and they had, you know, they had a connection. Our problem is, as I think, is schools, and again, I was a teacher, I was on the other side, and I totally, you know, am guilty of this, is that what we think of them, when they want safety, what we think of as safety is different. Our idea is, let's get a security guard on campus.
Exactly.
You know, information for them is different. Our idea is, let's tell them, you know, what the bell schedule is, and, you know, let's tell them that this is a big year for testing, and we've got to get all the right testing. You know, their information is worth the bathroom.
Hold your thoughts. Hold your thoughts for 1 second. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. What's the 411? I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and returning this hour to continue my exploration of the Boomerang Project with Mary Beth Campbell, co-founder. Mary Beth, what are some of the signs of bullying, you know, that parents or teachers may be tuned in for? You might want to alert them to kind of watch for.
Well, certainly getting up every day and saying you're sick and don't want to go to school. That's the first one. Absolutely, 100%. You know, if your child has a stomach ache every day, you got to dig deeper on that one. Plummeting grades, dropping out of things that they were interested in before, whether they were on a sports team or in a club, and they're just kind of withdrawing from all of those things. Another one, too, that I think a lot of parents, on the face of it, think, oh, this is great. But then when you really dig deep, it's an over desire to cling and to be at home and to be with your parent, because that feels safe. So it's a not wanting to go anywhere without you and, you know, wanting to hang out with you on the weekends. I mean, that's awesome and really cool for kids to have that kind of relationship. But if that's their if it's leaning towards the primary relationship and they're not making any friends on their own, you got to wonder.
That's a problem. How do you distinguish, let's say, bullying from normal teasing?
Well, I mean,
is there such a thing as normal teasing?
Yeah, you know, I don't, you know, if you're going to ask me, I'm going to say there's not. You know, I mean, I just don't think you know, there's that whole adage, you know, kids will be kids and, you know, well, someone did it to me. It's tradition, you know. I think that we are so desensitized to it that we have this kind of idea that it's okay no matter, you know, like on some, oh, he's my friend. I can say that to him. Right. Really? Mm-hmm. Really? You can do that to your friend? That's interesting. And the friend kind of, you know, and if you really dig deep and you ask the kid, how did that feel? Well, you know, it doesn't feel good. Mm-mm. And so, you know, we're brought to this, you know, kind of this world with this idea that, you know, well, there's some level of harassment you're going to take. And when it actually becomes, you know, psychically painful and physically painful, that's when you get to complain. And I think that's just because we're desensitized. And I think if we really peel back, you know, even the small kind of comments, that we would see that those are insidious and they hurt as well. Mm-hmm. We do this thing with both our teachers and students is we have them clap their hands 7 times really, really hard. So if you clap once, it hurts. If you clap twice, if you clap 7 times as hard as you can, your hands are throbbing by the end. And then we have, you know, and they're like looking at me like, why are you doing that? And I'll say, okay, now look at your hands and say, I'm sorry. And they'll go, and I say, well, did your hand stop hurting?
No.
And they're like, no. And I'm like, well, there you go. So I think, you know, but, you know, if I were to take a knife and have you cut your own hand, well, then all of a sudden now we have like, hey, let's get the ambulance. Now everybody's up in a tither, right?
Right.
But really, that's just on its way to being more and more hurtful.
Mm-hmm. Who are the bullies?
You know, I just read a great article. I wish I could remember where, but I just read this. We have this notion that the bullies are those who lack self-esteem and who want to feel superior to others. And there was this great study done, and if I had known you were going to ask me this question, I'd have it in front of me, and I don't have it, that more and more, and it's a lot because of our affluent society and the privilege that a lot of us live in, is that the bullies are less and less actually lacking self-esteem and more truly believe they are superior. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not saying that that's an absolute, you know, a cross-the-board fact, but I'm just saying this one study talked about it, and I thought that was really fascinating because it kind of makes sense in the way that our world is right now. You know, there's a lot of people who feel entitled. And so I think, you know, to some degree, I think it is that. And I think the very common notion that it's kids that feel, you know, somehow less than and have to build themselves up. I really do think that old kind of archetype is true.
Well, I know you have examined some of the best ways of coping and dealing with bullying. So let's look at some of this in these last few minutes of the program. I would like to explore and examine some of the ways of dealing with bullies.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't victims stand up for themselves? Or why don't they confront the bullies in the first place?
You know, I think it's the same reason why when a crime happens in a neighborhood and the police come and they want witnesses, nobody steps forward.
Mm-hmm.
You're afraid of retaliation. And I think kids at schools who are being bullied do not stand up, and other kids don't stand up for them because there is no safety net there. Because obviously they feel like the structure set up the school won't support
mm-hmm.
that kind of, you know, upstanding
exactly.
versus, you know, so it really encourages bystanding. If you feel like there isn't a level of support on your campus for a kid to go and say, hey, I'm being bullied, or to have, see, the thing is that when you have older kids who care for the younger kids, maybe the younger kids can't stand up for themselves, but
mm-hmm.
that older kid will
yeah.
walk up, and we hear it all the time through our program, will walk up and say, hey, you know what, we don't do that here at our school. Don't do that. Make fun of this kid. And
that's
a lot of times,
great.
That's done. It's done. That's all you
great.
Need is a junior
that's,
to
mm-hmm.
you know, a senior to say to a sophomore, why are you picking on this guy, really? And it's over.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have the structure for that at your school, you're only relying on some awesome kids who just are doing that on their own.
Right.
And more and more, you have to give kids permission to do that. I don't think they have permission to stand up because they don't feel like they can, and also they don't feel like they're going to get, you know, the support. They're going to get too much retaliation from the other side.
Do you feel the media plays a role in contributing to bullying?
No more or less than they play a role in trying to decrease it, you know. I think, you know, I'm hard-pressed to find any part of our lives that the media doesn't play a role in right now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, yeah, I mean, kids know it's there, but I think if the media didn't exist, it would still be there,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've identified some anti-bullying tips, and I'd like to explore some of them
sure.
for our listening audience. One of them, for example, was be an upstander and not a bystander.
Mm-hmm.
And just what were you referring to?
So that means that if you're walking by and you see something happening, don't walk by. Don't be a bystander. You know, for instance, all of the fights that get, you know, filmed and thrown on YouTube, that's a bystander. That's someone
exactly.
who's just watching it. But go either, if you feel like empowered enough and you feel like you can take, you know, and I'm not just saying in a fight, but if you just see somebody harassing a kid on a bus for no reason except that maybe, you know, he's got freckles,
mm-hmm.
then it's like, hey, you know, knock it off kind of thing. Or talk to somebody else. That's still upstanding, even if it's not you. If you go to someone else and say, here's what I saw, you know, can we help this kid? That's still upstanding. So just don't be a bystander. Don't turn a blind eye.
Okay. I would think that empathy would be paramount in thwarting bullying behavior, considering what it's like to be a victim. Is
yeah.
that a component of it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the best way to, you know, make sure that other people aren't picked on is to create that sense of empathy around, you know, people who are in power, essentially. And at a school, no one's more in power than the upperclassmen, right?
Exactly.
So if you grab a section of those upperclass people and you say, hey, and you help them see the empathy and help them remember what it was like when they were in sixth grade or when they were in ninth grade, you know, a lot of times they just forget.
That's true.
But if you put them back to that place, their compassion level rises, and they're so far more apt to walk up to somebody and say something. I really believe that our juniors and seniors and our eighth graders in our schools don't understand the power that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to say, I mean, clearly they do, because, you know, sometimes they do some stuff and it's like, really, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
But once you say
were
to them,
you thinking?
Exactly. But once you say to them, here's the power that you have, and really sometimes it's as simple as saying, do you remember when you were a freshman what you thought about the seniors? And you can see their eyes go, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
And then you say, well, now you're one of them. Like, oh, holy mm-hmm. cow. And as soon as you make them recognize that power they have and then enlist their empathy and their compassion, that changes everything.
Well, another component I would think is them feeling comfortable and safe within themselves to take a stance, to say something, you know, and how does one accomplish that? How do you get that student to feel good enough, to have enough confidence and empowerment to intervene and say, hey, that's not cool. That's not appropriate. We don't do that here.
Right. Well, the first thing you do as an overall school is you have a structure for which if a kid did that, they would be supported. In other words, the kid can do that and feel like they can go to somebody in the administration and be like, here's what I said, here's what I saw, here's what I did, and the administration would be like, got it. So I think that's the first thing you do is the student has to feel like there's a structure behind them. They can't feel like they're isolated on their own. And the second thing you do is help them recognize the responsibility they have for the school climate, you know, that they can affect change if they choose to make conscious decisions about who they are every day. And I think a lot of times students feel unempowered to do anything. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of times because as adults, we kind of put them at arm's length and say, well, you're not old enough to this, you can't do that. But if we empower them and say, you know what, here's the deal. You actually are totally, fully capable and responsible for making our campus a better place. And here's the ways in which you can do it. Giving them permission is a huge thing. A lot of times they don't feel like they have permission because I've heard some kids say, you know, I didn't want to get involved. I thought I was going to get in trouble.
Mm. Yeah.
So, you know, to give them that structure and to let them know that they have permission to step in. And then the third thing is really to work with them and help them understand that they have something valuable to offer. And, you know, that's not a sentence you can say to a kid, hey, you've got something valuable to offer. That takes, you know, that takes training, and it takes working with the students to say, you know, you can bring something to the table that will help change our school community. We're glad you're here. You know, and I think a lot of times schools just want all that to happen on its own. And unless you put a structure in, it's not going to happen.
Well, I think it also sends, when someone sticks up for someone else, it sends a strong message.
Yeah.
You know, that message is just, you know, invaluable.
Yeah. It speaks to the bigger picture, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually what's one of the tips. It's like when you're doing it, think about what it means for the victim. So, A, well, how you're making that victim feel, which is like, oh, thank goodness you're here. And B, what it says to every single person who's watching you do that. Absolutely. And C, what it says about the school climate. This is a school where we don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't just me telling this one kid we don't do that. This is everybody at the school that's seeing that going, oh, so we don't tolerate this at the school. Oh, okay.
That does not go. And I think, that message is really a very powerful one.
Yeah,
in fighting
it's huge.
You know, and go ahead.
That's what changes schools.
Yeah. In the past, you know, victims of bullying have been directed to ignore the behavior.
Yeah.
Do you agree with this? Is this what's
recommended? This was advice my mom gave me when I was like in fifth grade, and I'm categorically can tell you it does not work. It didn't work for my particular instance, you know. I mean, it does sometimes work. It just depends on the kind of bully you're dealing with, you know. If you're dealing with a bully who really wants a reaction, it's probably going to work. But if you're dealing with a bully who's just excited to make you feel bad, they're going to keep on going.
Mm-hmm.
So it really, you know, it you know, what stops bullying behavior is another peer saying to that kid, another peer that kid respects, saying to that kid, you're being a bully.
Mm-hmm.
You're being a jerk. You need to stop.
Mm-hmm.
That's what stops a bully in its tracks. And unless you set up a system for kids to be able to say that to each other, you know, there's those few awesome kids that, you know, they arrive on this planet with some kind of, you know, self-empowered knowledge that they have that kind of ability to do those things. There's few of them, but they're few and far between. And I think schools often a lot rely on the presence of those kids to make that happen. And you don't have to, because you can actually create it at your school if you're willing to put in the time.
Well, I've got one quick question. I think we
sure.
have a couple of minutes left. Do you feel like the dynamics of bullying change with age?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
It gets more physical the older you get.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, what's bullying called bullying when you're a kid is actually called hazing when you're in high school and college.
Exactly. And I'm glad to hear you say that.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, and then when you get out of college and you become an adult, then we call it tradition.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, our society is we're, you know, we've been brainwashed to think that. And what we're trying to do is peel that back.
Before we close, would you again share the contact information for those who are listening? They may want more information concerning your program.
Sure. With Boomerang Project, we are the home of Link Crew and Web, and we can be found at boomerangproject.com. Our phone number is 800-688-7578.
I know one of your techniques said, when in doubt, be nice. And I just wanted to ask you to cover that real quickly, that one and one more.
If you find yourself in a position where you are, you know, feeling like someone's being mean to you, you know, when in doubt, just be nice. Because a lot of times I think a lot of disagreements arise from misunderstandings. Mm-hmm. And so somebody says something, and if you're going to turn around, you know, say something mean back, it's like, well, wait a minute. I'm going to be nice and give that person a chance to back out, you know, because a lot of times I think that that's how stuff happens. I said this. Well, I thought you meant this. Well, that's not it. And then all of a sudden you've got this huge thing. So if you just kind of are nice and then the person is, you know, then you realize, oh, good, I'm glad I didn't jump on that because they didn't actually mean that, then you've avoided a whole conflict.
Well, Mary Beth, you know, we're out of time. You'll have to come back. you know, there are many more questions I'd like to ask, but I've been talking with Mary Beth Campbell, co-founder of the Boomerang Project, a company that trains educators to facilitate peer mentoring in schools, creating an atmosphere that is safety and health. That's it for this edition of 411 Teen. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical engineer, Evan Rossi. Audio copies are available, and if you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have topic suggestions, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. That's 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen Podcast, log in wfsu.org.